Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us on our very first show of Guide to the Cosmos. Our show is going to be about presenting the exciting discoveries of modern science in a way that is both understandable and enjoyable. Now, many people think that science has gotten to be too complicated and too esoteric, and it just isn't something for them. And I think that's a real shame, because I think science is a lot of fun. I like to say that science is a bit like music, in the sense that you don't need to be a great musician to appreciate great music. And in the same sense, you do not need to be a great math and physics whiz in order to appreciate the exciting discoveries that are being made at the frontiers of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology. In this show, we are going to explore the cosmos to the very outer reaches of outer space and to the very most minute reaches of inner space, the world of subatomic particles, and to a scale that is in between, to discoveries that relate to the Earth itself. Our show is going to be driven by the interests of our listeners. So if you'd like to suggest a topic or have a question, please go to my website, guidetothecosmos.com. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Send us your questions and comments and suggestions. And if you would like to ask your question on the air, send us your phone number as well. We're going to start our show with a discussion of the telescope, one of the most important instruments of modern science. We'll discuss its history and the discoveries that have been made over the centuries with telescopes, and I'll tell you why I call telescopes a form of time machines. Now, during our discussion, we're going to talk about some beautiful images that I have posted on my website. And you'd probably like to look at these images while you're listening to the audio. So what you should do is leave open the window that's giving you the audio track and open a second window and click on my website, guidetothecosmos.com. On the home page, there's a radio microphone icon. Click on that, and that will bring up a menu of radio shows. And click on this one, which is 2009, the year of the telescope. 2009 is the International Year of Astronomy, and the entire world is celebrating the 400th anniversary of the first telescope being pointed at the heavens by Galileo Galilei. Now, everybody knows his first name, and the only reason that I mentioned his last name is to emphasize the fact that it ends in an I. Because Italians who come from the province of Tuscany typically have names that end in an I, like Piccioni. So Galileo and I come from the same fine tradition of Tuscan scientists. If you look on the website at image number one, you'll see a chart which shows how the resolution of telescopes has improved over the last four centuries. Before Galileo, astronomers could only look at the stars with their naked eye, and they could see a certain amount of detail. But when Galileo pointed his telescope at the heavens, he was able to see about 600 times more detail than anyone had seen before, and this changed the way that humanity viewed the world and our place in it. Galileo looked at the moon, and he discovered that it wasn't just a flat disk of light. It had mountains and valleys, much like the Earth, and he could see the shadows of these mountains changing as the angle of the sun changed. And he realized that the moon had to be a ball, a sphere like the Earth, It had to be, in a sense, a world of its own, and not just a spot of light in the sky. Then he pointed his telescope at the planet Jupiter, and he was the first to see that Jupiter actually had moons of its own. He discovered four moons orbiting Jupiter, and they clearly were orbiting Jupiter, and they weren't orbiting the Earth. This was the first time that any human being had ever seen something that didn't look like it was going around and around the Earth. And that, again, changed the entire way that humanity has looked at the world and our place in it. Later, of course, Galileo had to recant some of his discoveries or risk burning at the stake for heresy. As you can see from this image, steady improvements were made in the resolution of telescopes with bigger and better optical systems. But all of these improvements pale in comparison to the great advance that was achieved in 1990 with the launch of the Hubble Space Telescope. Now, with the Hubble Space Telescope, we are able to see about 2.5 million times as much detail as could be seen before with the human eye. This telescope is named after an astronomer called Edwin Hubble. And when he was a kid in high school, he was a track star. He had no intention of becoming an astronomer. His father intended that he would become an attorney. He was such a good track star that in one meet he won 7 events. And later he set the high jump record for the state of Illinois. Who would have thought at that time that it would have been Edwin Hubble who first leaped outside our own Milky Way galaxy? When Edwin Hubble decided to switch to astronomy, he started studying nebula, which seemed to be clouds of gas with lots of stars that were considered to be parts of the Milky Way. Using a technique that was discovered by Henrietta Leavitt, who was the first American female astronomer of fame, he was able to prove that some of these nebula weren't actually just clouds of gas, but were actually galaxies of their own. And they were tremendously distant and tremendously massive. And overnight, he discovered that the universe was at least 1 million times larger than anyone had ever perceived before. Then he continued and combined these measurements with another technique called redshift that allows us to measure how fast distant objects are moving. And Hubble was able to show that the universe was expanding. And again, this was a revolution in mankind's view of the universe. So with an array of fabulous telescopes on the ground and NASA's spectacular space telescopes, astronomy is now in a golden age. We have learned more about the heavens in our lifetime than mankind learned in the entire previous history of the species. This truly is the golden age of astronomy, and it's all due to telescopes. You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos on webtalkradio.net. I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and today we are talking about telescopes. If you look now at image number 2 on the website, you'll see a beautiful picture of what is called the Butterfly Nebula. And this is one of the first pictures that has been returned from the newly repaired Hubble Space Telescope. As you probably know, in 2004, we had the disaster of the loss of the Columbia space shuttle with all of its crew. That prompted the NASA administration to decide that they were never going to repair the Hubble Space Telescope again because a mission to Hubble is riskier than a mission to the International Space Station. There is a greater chance of rescuing a crew from the International Space Station than from the higher orbit of the Hubble Space Telescope. But over the years, pressure from scientists and also from the general public convinced NASA to change their position, and indeed, they did launch a final repair mission to the Hubble Space Telescope. During 5 grueling spacewalks, our astronauts replaced all of the Hubble Space Telescope's gyroscopes, all of its batteries, many of which were dead, and installed 2 great new optical systems and repaired 2 other of the optical systems on the space telescope. The new devices include the Wide Field Camera version 3, which is about 20 times more sensitive than the previous camera, and the Cosmic Origins spectrograph. So with these new instruments, Hubble is now able to take images over a much broader range of wavelengths. That means it can see a much broader range of colors of light, far beyond the range of colors that we can see with our eye. And with this extra capability, Hubble will be able to do two very important things that are even beyond the capabilities that it had before. Firstly, it could see galaxies that are even younger than the galaxies that it has previously seen, because young galaxies have higher redshifts, they're shifted further to the red end of the spectrum, and that requires the added infrared capacity that Hubble now has. And secondly, Hubble will be able to analyze the atmosphere of planets. As you know, NASA is looking for habitable planets outside of our own solar system. And so far, we've found about 400 of these planets, none of which turns out to be very Earth-like. And it's very important to know whether any of those planets have a viable atmosphere. So with the added capability that Hubble has, we'll be able to look at the atmospheres of some of these planets and see if they have, for instance, oxygen. Now, if you look at the Butterfly Nebula image, you'll see the spectacular scene of a dying star. There is a tremendous amount of gas being expelled from this star as it prepares to explode. And the gas is being shot out on two sides of the star, forming these beautiful structures that look like butterfly wings. The surface of this star is one of the hottest temperatures that's ever been measured for a star, and that is nearly 500,000 degrees Fahrenheit. This is a star which is 24,000 million miles away. This star will continue to expel its outer layers, and eventually the core will collapse. And at that point, there may be a spectacular explosion, perhaps even a supernova, one of the most brilliant and violent events in the entire cosmos. Let's look now at image number 3, which is a picture of the Sombrero Galaxy, which is truly massive. Its mass is about 800 billion times the mass of our sun. 800 billion times the mass of our sun. And at its center is a supermassive black hole, possibly with a mass as much as 1 billion times the mass of our sun. 1 billion stellar masses compressed in a volume that's smaller than a single atom. This image of the Sombrero Galaxy was voted by the public as the most beautiful of all Hubble Space Telescope images. And the Sombrero is 170 million, million, million miles away. Now, astronomers don't talk about miles because there are so many of them out in outer space, so they have a different unit for measuring vast distances, which is called the light year. A light year isn't really something to do with time, it's rather a distance. It's the distance that light travels in a year. Light travels through empty space at the highest possible velocity that anything can move through space. That's 671 million miles per hour. And a year is a relatively long time, as we know. So in 1 year, light travels about 6 trillion miles. And in those terms, the Sombrero Galaxy is 28 million light years away. So that means it takes light 28 million years to travel from the Sombrero Galaxy to us. And that means that the light that we're seeing in our telescopes today began its journey 28 million years ago. So truthfully, the image that we're seeing today is not what the Sombrero looks like today. The image we're seeing today is what the Sombrero Galaxy looked like 28 million years ago, when the light that's reaching our telescopes today began that long journey. That image from 28 million years ago has been preserved in the time capsule of light speeding across the vast distances of the cosmos. So I like to say that telescopes are a form of time machine. Telescopes don't take our bodies back to the good old days, whenever that was, but they do take our eyes there. So when we look out in the vast distances of space, we are simultaneously looking back in time. And the further we look out, the further back in time we see. So astronomers have a great advantage. They don't have to guess what the universe was like a million years ago, a billion years ago, or even 12 billion years ago. All they need is a big enough telescope to be able to look far enough away to see that far back in time. Time and space are connected by the speed of light. The next image I'd like to point out is number 4 on the website, and this is called the Hubble Ultra Deep Field image, and it's a very famous picture. It takes us almost to the edge of our visible universe and almost back to the beginning of time itself. Now, there's a very interesting story about how this picture was taken. If you imagine for a moment that a galaxy is like a tree, and the universe is like a great forest of trees, then we're sitting out on a limb of one of the trees, and we're trying to peer through the others to get to the edge of the forest. We'd like to see as far through the forest as we possibly can. But because there's so many trees in the way, we have to find a spot that's like a little hole between the trees that we can peer through. And that's exactly what this image is. The Hubble Space Telescope team decided that they wanted to take a picture of the most distant thing that could possibly be seen. They wanted to see as far out into space as was possible. And so they looked for an area of the sky that seemed to be completely black, an area where there didn't seem to be any other trees. And they took the world's fanciest and most expensive telescope, and they aimed it at that small black spot in the sky, and they opened the shutter for 1 million seconds to see what was there. Now, most Kodak moments are over in the 60th of a second, so a 1 million second exposure is truly fantastic. And actually, they didn't really open the shutter for 1 million seconds and then close it. They had to take the exposure in a whole series of smaller shots and then add them all together. Because, as you know, the Hubble is a space telescope, and so it orbits the Earth about every 90 minutes. And so it can only point at one spot in the sky for about 40 minutes at maximum until it swings around the other side of the Earth. So they took a large number of shorter exposures over a period of about a month until they got 1 million seconds of shutter time, which is the equivalent of about 12 days. Now, it could have been that there was nothing in that image. They were taking a big gamble by risking 1 million seconds of the world's finest telescope. It could have been that there was nothing in that image at all. It could have turned out to be just as black as they thought it was in the first place. And if they had come up with a completely black picture, we might have a new director of the Hubble Space Telescope. But fortunately, none of that happened. Fortunately, they came up with this spectacular Hubble Deep Field image in which we can see 10,000 galaxies that have never been seen before. And some of these galaxies are so far away that it has taken light 13 billion years to reach us from those galaxies. 13 billion years. If you look at some of the insets at the bottom of the main picture, you will see magnified portions of that Hubble Ultra Deep Field image in which we can see the formation of some of the very first galaxies in the universe from smaller assemblies of stars. There are 10,000 galaxies in this image, as I said, and this is just a very small piece of the sky. Actually, if you were to pick up a grain of sand and hold it at arm's length, this is about as much of the sky as this image covers. And with this image and others, astronomers are quite confident in saying that our entire observable universe contains at least 100 billion galaxies, each of which, on average, has about 100 billion stars. So there truly are more stars in the heavens than there are grains of sand, on all the beaches of all the oceans of the world. Now, the last thing I'd like to point out about the Hubble Space Telescope is that it has measured the age of the universe. Now, how can a telescope do that? How can a telescope take a picture which shows us the age of the universe? Doesn't that sound remarkable? Well, this is how it did it. There's a type of exploding star which always explodes in a special way. It's called a type 1A supernova. Now, all supernova are very bright, and they are the death explosions of massive stars. But a type 1A is special because it always happens in exactly the same way and releases exactly the same amount of energy. The way a type 1A supernova occurs is that a star, which is, let's say, comparable to our sun, eventually reaches the end of its life and becomes a white dwarf, a very small, very dense object with a very, very strong gravitational field. Well, if this star is part of a duo of stars, a binary star system, which are much more common than single star systems, then it can indeed pull gas from the outer layers of its companion star. It's like stellar cannibalism. The white dwarf is stealing gas from its companion, and the white dwarf is getting more and more massive at the expense of the companion star. As the white dwarf becomes more and more massive, it eventually reaches a critical mass, a mass which is too great for the structure of a white dwarf to support. And at that moment, it implodes, and there is a tremendous release of energy, and the star blows itself to smithereens, totally destroying the star and releasing a phenomenal amount of energy. A white dwarf that explodes as a type 1A supernova is billions of times as bright as a typical star. It can outshine an entire galaxy and is visible almost all the way across the universe. With the Hubble Space Telescope, we are able to see these spectacular events at distances that are 17 times further out than we were ever able to see with conventional telescopes. Because they always explode with the same amount of energy, we're able to determine how far away each of these explosions actually is. And by measuring the redshift, we can determine how fast these objects are moving away from us. Combining the two measurements, we can measure the expansion rate of the universe. And the Hubble Space Telescope has provided some of the most precise measurements of the expansion rate of the universe. Now, we know that the universe was created in one place at one moment that we call the Big Bang, and that it has been expanding ever since. Since we know the current size and we know the expansion rate, we can figure out how long it's been that the universe has been expanding. And how long it's been expanding is exactly the same as the age of the universe. So by measuring the distances and measuring the expansion rate, we are able to compute the age of the universe. And the number turns out to be 13.7 billion years, with a precision of only 1%, which means we know that it's between 13.5 and 13.9 billion years. That is an extremely precise measurement for such an important number. Now, just a few decades ago, astronomers really didn't have a clue what the age of the universe was. There were some astronomers who thought it might be only 2 billion years old, and there were other astronomers who felt equally strongly that the universe was infinitely old. So there was this vast range, and we didn't really know what the age of the universe was. And now, with the space telescopes that we have, principally with the Hubble, we know the age of the universe to a precision of 1%. 13.7 billion years. It's truly a remarkable accomplishment of humanity. So let me summarize by saying that almost everything we know about our universe comes from telescopes. Telescopes have repeatedly changed our view of the world around us and our place in that world. That began 400 years ago, and it still continues through this very day. Join us again next week when we will discuss the question of whether or not the world will end in 2012, according to a Mayan prophecy. Thank you, and remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.